for your wife.
I heard that too, said Harris. Didn't make the connection. He said the hunting had lost its joy this season, or something flowery like that. Decided to cancel the hunt. My Italian is pretty bare bones.
I should have said something, Smith said after a glance up at Adam's face.
Yes, but there hadn't been a very good time to do it. It wasn't anything that he hadn't expected. It was just a relief to hear. All right, Adam let out his breath. Mercy should be fine until we can get her. We'll talk to Buonarroti tonight, and then we'll go find my wife. Smith said,
There are some stories you should know that I've heard about Prague.
Like the stories about Libor? Asked Harris.
Smith shook his head.
Libor is difficult, but there's not an alpha on the planet who isn't difficult one way or the other.
He paused.
Present company accepted, I'm sure.
Adam snorted.
Smith continued, At any rate, there are two vampire seeds in the heart of Prague.
Adam frowned. They're even more territorial than we wolves. Is there room for two seeds in Prague?
Exactly, Smith said. Nothing really wrong, but I think it would have been better if your mate had found her way to Munich or Paris. London, even.
Up to you, Hauptmann, Harris said. We could fly to Prague, collect your mate, fly back. Depending upon how long it takes to find her, we might make it back before dark.
Adam considered it, but it would still mean abandoning Marsilia and Stefan. And that was wrong.
Smith said in a low voice,
You'd be bringing your mate back into his clutches. He'd see your going as an insult or a challenge. It might make him do something interesting.
If you leave her in Prague and let him know you have her location, he'll know you respect her ability to take care of herself.
It will leave you in a more powerful position in the end.
Mercy can take care of herself, Adam growled, because it was his privilege to take care of her anyway.
He took a deep breath and turned to Harris.
Be ready to leave any time after nightfall tonight. I'll let Marsilia handle the negotiations. She knows how the bastard's mind works.
No one knows how Buonarroti's mind works, murmured Smith. That's why he's still around.
Get some sleep, said Adam.
He was starting to feel the long day, too. He hadn't done anything more than catnap since Mercy had been taken. He had a course in front of him now, and even if the monster inside him wasn't happy with his decision, it was made.
He closed the door and started down the stairs, but paused because someone was walking down the hallway from another wing of the villa.
He couldn't see him, but he heard his footsteps.
Inside him, Adam's wolf alerted because the other was walking softly like a trained fighter who doesn't want to be noticed. He trotted back up the stairs he'd just come down. Unlike the other man, Adam made no sound. He timed his approach so that he stepped into the hallway about 5 feet in front of the other man. In front of the vampire.
Guccio's pretty face broke into a pretty smile that didn't show his teeth.
Adam, he said, I didn't expect to see you here.
Were they on a first-name basis? Adam's wolf said no, but Adam swallowed it because all he knew was the vampire's first name. He managed a casual raised eyebrow when the wolf wanted to eliminate the threat to his people. Vampire, Adam said, tipping his head toward Guccio in something that the vampire was welcome to read as greeting.
Should you be out in the day?
There were vampires who could move about in dusk or twilight, but Adam reckoned they were close upon mid-afternoon. Even though the inner halls of the villa were windowless and lit by artificial lights, it was the sun that mattered. When the sun rose, a vampire's spirit or soul or whatever left their body and no longer animated it. The corpse left behind smelled and felt like a corpse. Vampires were dead every day. Wolf noses don't lie.
Guccio's smile widened.
The Lord of Night once had a very powerful witch.
He held up a hand-stitched cloth bag tied around his neck. It appeared to Adam's southern-bred eyes and nose like a gris-gris bag. He smelled a number of herbs, but the main scent was something organic, decaying. Maybe Buonarroti's witch followed voodoo or hoodoo practices. Or maybe she, because strong witches were mostly women, was African, which was where the practice of making gris-gris originated. Adam had never heard of a witch who could let a vampire walk in the daytime. Maybe because there weren't any witches who would want to do so.
"It only allows me to walk when otherwise I would have to rest," Guccio said, letting the bag settle back against the hollow of his throat. "It cannot protect me from sunlight."
Adam wondered if Guccio knew how much longing was in his voice when he said sunlight. The vampires called it sun sickness when their kind became obsessed with the sun. Without intervention, vampires affected by sun sickness died within a year or two, walking out into the dawn of their own volition. Suicide of sorts, if they hadn't already been dead. Guccio was one of those people who liked hearing his own voice so much that he thought everyone felt the same way. He kept talking, but all Adam paid attention to was the threat he represented. Adam made answers that Guccio probably took as polite and wondered if he was going to have to kill Guccio before going to Prague. And Adam waited at the top of the stairs until Guccio turned back the way he'd come and kept going, following the hall as it took a sharp turn. He had never said what he was doing over by Adam's pilot's room. His wolf, furiously disturbed, Adam knocked on Harris and Smith's door for a second time. "Get your things," he said shortly, when Harris finally opened the door. "There are vampires wandering around in the daytime here. I'm not leaving you here alone." He gave the pilots the couches. He and Honey, both in wolf form, curled up on the throw rug in front of the cold fireplace. Honey slept, but Adam only managed to doze off and on, his wolf restless. He found himself checking the bond with Mercy over and over. All he could tell was that she was there, but for a few minutes it would quiet the wolf. He hoped it was just the wolf's reaction to the meeting with Guccio and not something about Mercy that the wolf could feel and the man could not. No one in the bedrooms stirred, not even to his wolf ears. Smith slept like the dead. Harris snored. Just enough that it made Adam worry that it would cover a noise that might warn him of an attack. People started stirring out in the hallways as the light outside bloomed into a glorious sunset. Adam shifted into his human shape, gathered his luggage, and went into the vampire's room to use their bathroom to shower, shave, and change. By the time he was done, both vampires were awake. They didn't speak. Maybe they couldn't. Adam could see their hunger, just as they could see his wolf. They had better get things tied up here tonight, or Bonarata might not be the one they had to worry about. He hadn't thought about the vampire's need to feed. He didn't know much about it. It was a touchy subject for Stefan, though maybe not for all vampires. Should he have suggested that they bring one of their willing donors, what did Mercy call them, one of their sheep with them? But he didn't think he could have stood back and watched, not knowing that the human's willingness might not be anything more than a strange and strong addiction. They were adults. More than adults, they were powers in their own right, he decided as he nodded to them and kept going out the door to the main room of the suite. He would do his best to keep them safe, but they could find their own food. In the common room, Harris and Larry were up, dressed in keeping with their differing roles in this play. Elisaveta was wearing a slate-gray suit with a diamond brooch. She looked like someone's sweet and expensive grandmother. Soft. He wondered whom she was planning on blindsiding. There were two people showering. By process of elimination, that would have to be Honey and Smith. A polite knock sounded at the door. Adam started to get it, but Harris waved him back. "I believe that's my job, sir," he said deferentially, then flashed Adam a cheery grin. He opened the door to a male and female vampire, each pushing a trolley.
"Good morning," said the woman with a friendly smile and downcast eyes. "With my master's compliments, we have sustenance for your bloodborne. For the rest of your party, there is tea, coffee, and drinking chocolate. First meal will be served in an hour in the main dining room. It is generally less formal than last meal. No ties required. My master requests that a half hour before the meal, you attend him again in the receiving room. If you would like a guide, one will be provided you."
The receiving room is the old library? Adam asked. She gave him a surprised look before dropping her eyes.
Yes, sir.
It still smells of books, Harris explained, touching his nose. The wolves pay more attention to the scents of things than most people do. We won't need a guide. The servants withdrew. Adam claimed the cart that held a tea service with a large, elaborately fashioned black and gold teapot that did not, according to his nose, hold anything like tea. I'll take it into them, he said. He trusted that Marsilia and Stefan had enough control not to attack anyone even with their hunger riding them, but he wouldn't send anyone else in just in case. He knocked once. They would have heard the exchange with Bonarata's servants, and went in. Marsilia was dressed and putting a diamond drop earring on. Stefan was buttoning his white silk shirt.
Thank you, Marsilia said.
There was no trace of the hunger in either of their faces, but Adam knew what he'd seen. He pushed the cart all the way into the room and turned to leave them to it. Marsilia said,
Wait.
He stopped and looked at her.
Please,
she said. Then she nodded to Stefan, who closed the door. As soon as the door shut, she approached him.
Did you meet with a vampire in this house between the time we were tired and awakened?
Guccio, he said. Mercy contacted Ben via email using a stolen e-reader. She's alive in Prague and likely to stay that way until we get there. I went to talk to Harris to let him know we'd be wheels up tonight as soon as you figure out what a proper leave-taking of Bonarata consists of. Sooner rather than later, if you can manage. Marsilia absorbed all of that. While she did, Stefan said, Guccio, in the day? He had some sort of magical bag, witchcraft. I want to ask Elisaveta about it. Stefan considered that. Then he said, Did he do anything odd? No bite marks, Adam said. I checked. And he had. He knew about vampire mind tricks, and his wolf was even more agitated than it had been when he found out about Mercy. Stefan nodded slowly.
Okay, you should be okay, then. You just...
He glanced over at Marsilia, who sighed.
Vampires have scent markers, she told him. It's not quite a secret, but not something we tell everyone about. We leave them involuntarily when we feed off a human, but we can also do it deliberately, a touch, a brush of skin on skin, a way of marking someone as ours. As soon as you walked into the bedroom, Stefan and I could tell you'd been marked by someone. I didn't know Guccio well enough to remember how his scent marker smells.
Adam sniffed himself, but he couldn't detect anything different. It made him uneasy that the vampires could smell something he couldn't, but that might be why his wolf was so upset. I showered, he said. And it's still here? Stefan grinned. Don't worry. Mercy won't smell it either. Some kind of vampire magic designed to keep some poor fool from taking a bite of a master vampire's prey. Vampires can smell it from the newest hatchling to the oldest doddering geriatric. His smile was real, but his eyes were solemn.
It's considered rude, unless it's one of your own people. Someone who has to go out and about among our kind, and you want to protect them from other vampires.
What an interesting thing to do to a guest of Bonarata, said Marsilia. I wonder what it means.
Adam felt his mouth quirk up. I guess we'll find out. Marsilia narrowed her eyes at him. Come on out to the main room, he said. I have a few things to talk over with everyone. But when they made it to the main room, Honey was still getting dressed in Elisaveta's room. Smith was in the suite, and from the wide-eyed look he gave Adam, he'd heard about the vampire scent marking him. Adam was pretty sure there was a glint of something in Smith's eyes, too. But the other wolf dropped his head like a good submissive, so Adam couldn't be sure. Given that there were no bite marks, Adam could see why they found it funny that he, a werewolf, had been marked as prey by the stupid vampire. The two goblins were pointedly looking at the window, their backs to the room. Presumably so that Adam couldn't see their wide grins. Elisaveta looked from Adam to Smith to the goblins and said, in a voice with virtually no Russian accent at all, so that Adam knew she was really angry,
Please tell me the joke so that I know what you and the vampires were conversing about. It seems that I am the only who did not hear what went on.
Adam bowed to her and said in Russian, My apologies. It is a joke on me, I am afraid. Please let us wait until Honey is here, and I will tell everyone some information I've gotten while you've slept. And I think you may provide us with important information about what I have to say. She arched an eyebrow at him, but he knew that by addressing her in Russian, which everyone here did not understand, he had given her a sop to her pride, because, in that case, she was not the one left out of the information flow. And letting her know she held vital information was a boost to her ego. She knew he was manipulating her, but she decided to allow it.
Very well, she said in English, her accent back in place. I can wait for Honey.
Honey came out, her short hair a little damp and her face freshly made up. She smelled just a little of rose petals. A human might not catch it, but the vampires would. She wore a rose-colored tank top without a bra and jeans that looked as though she wouldn't be able to draw a deep breath. Around her neck was a gold chain with a small wolf charm. He knew that Peter, her dead mate, had gotten her the necklace because Adam had gone with him to pick it out for her birthday. She looked like bait. He smiled at her, and she gave him a toothy smile back. He was glad he'd brought her, fierce and strong. She was a good wolf to have at your back. He told them about Mercy, told them that Guccio had been walking around the villa with a spell bag that allowed him to roam during the day, and he told them that he'd been marked so that all the vampires would think that he was Guccio's food. Honey stepped closer and sniffed him.
I don't smell anything.
She gave the vampires a suspicious look.
I don't either, said Larry. But I know that vampires have a way of marking their prey. It's seen as crude, because usually, unless it's a master vampire, it's an accident. Proof that a vampire lost control when he glanced at Marsilia and said, or she found some food that appealed to her. Sort of like spitting into a drink that isn't yours.
Adam smiled grimly at the goblin. Thank you. I'll store that image. He turned to Elisaveta. The bag Guccio wore around his neck, it looked and smelled like a Gris-Gris bag. He said it gave him the ability to stay awake during the day, but it wouldn't protect him from the sun. He closed his eyes and described it in as minute detail as he could manage, including a list of herbs and the other things he had picked up. Whatever was rotting in the bag smelled vaguely rodent-like to me. But it had been dead and covered in herbs for too long. Mostly it just smelled rotten. He claimed that a witch Bonorata had once had made it and that it allowed him to walk during the day. Elisaveta grunted.
Such a thing could be managed that way.
Oh, said Marsilia, a little too neutrally. I can do it for you for a fee, she acknowledged, but such things are limited. A certain amount of time per day, and only for so many days.
Could you do one for sunlight? Asked Stefan.
But he didn't sound hungry, just thoughtful.
It would really suck eggs if Bonorata has access to something that allows him to run around in the sunlight.
He'd gotten that suck eggs expression from Mercy. Elisaveta gave Stefan a shrewd look.
I can make you a gris-gris that will allow you to walk in the sun, she said gently. Would you wear it?
Stefan gave her an arrested look.
Never, he said slowly. No tarnish to your honor, Donna, but I would have to trust you a lot further than I trust anyone to venture out into the sunlight with a gris-gris.
Not at all insulted, Elisaveta gave him a slow smile.
That is good, soldier. You are wise. I think that any vampire who has lived as long as Bonorata has lived would feel the same.
She looked thoughtful.
Truthfully, I don't know that it could be done in any case. I would have to understand more about why sunlight, and not, say, full spectrum light from light bulbs, is fatal to your kind. The other, allowing you to walk during the daytime, would be a variant on part of zombie animation.
So the gris-gris is a consumable, Adam said. Elisaveta smiled at him.
A very expensive consumable, I think. It would take time to make, and its maker would have to be of a certain level of power. A lot of power and a lot of skill. You said the vampire claimed that Bonarata no longer has access to this witch?
That's what it sounded like, Adam said. If this is a non-renewable, consumable, and valuable magic item, then Guccio was not casually strolling by Harris's room.
No, agreed Marsilia. It is a good thing that you were there, and a good thing you brought them back with you. Or maybe we wouldn't have had pilots to take us home.
On Bonarata's orders? Asked Adam. She shrugged.
Maybe. Guccio might just be trying to curry favor. Jacob has always had a fondness for innovation.
He probably marked you for spite, said Stefan.
It was a dumb thing to do, though, and dumb people don't tend to last long enough around Bonarato to climb the power hierarchy.
A grigris such as the one he carried can affect people adversely, Elisaveta observed. That is true, black magic, and it tends to stain the user as well as the one who casts it.
She glanced at her watch.
If we are to meet with Bonarata at the time specified, we should leave.
11. Adam.
I could wish that Adam were more concerned with his own life than with saving everyone else's. Since it is a wish Adam has expressed often about me, I suppose I have no grounds to complain. I do anyway, of course.
Bonarata was dressed in slacks and a turquoise silk shirt that had been made for him. He was seated, doing paperwork, at a desk Adam had barely noticed the first time he'd been here.
A moment, please, he said, without glancing up.
Adam's dad had liked to do that when Adam had transgressed in some way. Invite him into his study, then sit down and do some other work for a while so that Adam could think very hard about whatever it had been that he, or one of his brothers, had done to get called into the study, and let him know that neither he nor his transgressions were as important as whatever else his father was working on. It had worked quite well on Adam when he was 11. Adam strolled over to the desk and stood, looking down upon the vampire, honey at his shoulder. Marsilia gave him a horrified look. Stefan flashed him a quick smile before turning his attention to a painting hanging some distance away. It was not the painting of Marsilia. From his position, Adam couldn't see the subject, other than there was a lot of blue, maybe a seascape. Elisaveta found an oil painting done in the classical style, The Rape of Leda, Adam thought, because there was a muscled and naked woman grappling with a human-sized swan. The two goblins and Smith were on the far side of the room, speaking softly, very softly if Adam couldn't hear it. If he couldn't, then neither could Bonarata. Bonarata figured out what had happened pretty quickly, Adam thought. His intimidation tactic had been turned on its head. The minute Bonarata looked up, Adam had the upper hand. Adam was fighting down amusement when the door next to the desk opened, and his wolf recoiled with horror and pity and revulsion as a dark-haired woman came in. She could have been beautiful or ugly or anything in between, and Adam would not have noticed. Every hair on his body, every sense belonging to the werewolf and alpha and pack, understood that the werewolf who came into the room was wrong.
Jacob, she said in a perfectly unremarkable tone as she set a large envelope on the desk in front of Bonarata. Annabella gave me this for you. She says that the architect has redrawn the section in the house in Seattle.
She turned to look at Adam and stared blankly at him. Her wolf was dead, and not dead, and so was the woman, or not. Whatever she was, confused his wolf and sent him into a frenzy of horror.
Good, Bonarata said. I have been waiting for these.
Adam thought that he was supposed to be nervous that the vampire was building a home in Seattle, but he had no emotion to spare for the vampire. His wolf was too focused on the damaged wolf. She wore a silver collar, though there was no marring of the skin where it rested. So it was not real silver. White gold, maybe. Her neck was covered with scars of bite marks, and so was every bit of skin he could see that wasn't on her face.
Her clothing had been chosen to display as much of that scarred skin as possible without being tacky. Adam wasn't the only one reeling. On the far side of the room, Smith forgot himself far enough to utter a low growl.
"Lenka," said Honey,
in a low voice that held the same horror that Adam felt. While Adam had been paying attention to the broken werewolf, Buonarrota had come to his feet, effectively putting an end to the dominance issue he'd begun. Adam was very far from caring about whether he or Buonarrota had the upper hand.
"Lenka," said Honey again,
taking a step toward the wolf, who looked at her without recognition. Honey said something in a tongue that had a nodding acquaintance with German, her voice taut and frantic. The broken wolf said something in reply in the same language, then turned to Buonarrota.
"I am sorry. You told me to speak only in English. You must punish me."
She sounded eager, though her scent carried bitter horror. Buonarrota smiled.
"It is of no matter. You were accommodating our guest."
And then Buonarrota made a mistake. He turned to say something to Honey. Distracted by Marsilia, Buonarrota had not paid much attention to Honey the day before, and he hadn't paid any attention at all to her while indulging himself trying to get one up on Adam. Honey was worth looking at normally, dressed as she was to attract attention. She could stop traffic.
"You," said Buonarrota,
and that's as far as he got because, as well as traffic, she apparently was pretty good at stopping speech. But mostly because Buonarrota was an addict, and Honey fit his craving like a bespoke suit. Honey, uncharacteristically, didn't see Bonarata's reaction. She was only paying attention to Lenka. Adam wasn't entirely certain Lenka saw it either, since he was watching Buonarrota and Honey. But there wasn't a werewolf in the room who wouldn't have smelled Bonarata's sudden interest. Lust had a very distinctive scent, be it a man-human, werewolf, or vampire.
"Honey," Buonarrota said slowly, his voice deepening. "Honey Jorgensen, correct?"
Lenka looked at Buonarrota. Then she drew a knife from somewhere and struck Honey. Or rather, she struck at Honey, who moved and thus caught only a thin slice across the front of her shoulder.
"Kill that one,"
said Adam's wolf, as clearly as he'd ever heard anything. He'd heard other werewolves say that sometimes their wolf spoke to them, and a couple of those he respected too much to discount their word. But in the nearly 5 decades he'd been a werewolf, he'd never had it happen to him.
"She is broken. Kill her."
Honey was a fighter, born and bred. Adam had spent the better part of 3 decades teaching her martial arts, but she'd had a good foundation before that. Lenka had no style, but, like some of the men he'd known in the Rangers, she showed every sign of having killed a lot of people. Honey moved prettier, but Lenka moved faster. His people started toward them as soon as Lenka pulled her knife, but they stopped when Adam waved them away. "Honey was attacked. She has the right to finish this. Lenka broke the guesting laws." The rest of them could interfere, but then the expectation would be that they subdue Lenka. If he left it as Honey's battle, she could take it all the way to the death because Lenka had struck the first blow. Buonarrota moved around his desk.
"Let me put a stop to this."
But Adam stepped in front of him. "No, she attacked Honey unprovoked. This is a legal fight by guesting law."
Buonarrota snarled at him. "She'll kill your wolf."
Adam took a step backward and turned at the same time, putting some distance between him and the vampire and allowing him a clear view of the fight. Let Buonarrota see for himself how likely Honey was to die in a fight with any werewolf, let alone one who was underweight and broken. Lenka was changing, her facial bones moving subtly under the scarless skin of her face. She took a kick in the ribs and let her body move with it as her hands snaked down to grab Honey's leg. But Honey saw it coming and dropped her body into a shoulder roll that brought her back into the outer circle of combat. Honey was holding back. Adam told her the words the wolf was whispering in his head, "Kill her, Honey. The woman you knew is not in that body anymore and cannot be brought back." Honey didn't look at him, though he could tell from the stiffness of her shoulders that she had heard him and didn't like what he'd said. Across the room, Smith met his eyes and nodded agreement. He, too, understood what Adam's wolf had known instinctively.
Buonarroti turned to Adam with a hiss. She is mine.
Adam assumed he meant Lenka, but given his addiction, he could have meant either one of them. Then you should have kept better control of your wolf, Adam told the vampire. If she had not attacked Honey, we would have left her alone.
Buonarroti growled soundlessly, but Adam heard it just the same. The vampire turned to the fighters and said, Lenka, kill her for me.
Adam was pretty sure that Lenka was doing her best to do just that. Those words had been aimed at Adam. After that, everyone was silent, only moving to get out of the way. And Elizaveta was both quick and graceful for a woman of years. The room was mostly empty of furniture except for the small desk Buonarroti had been using. And the desk didn't last. Lenka ripped off a delicately carved leg and broke it over Honey's thigh, a hit that was meant for her knee. It was the table leg that got Honey's head on straight. Up until that point, despite Adam's order, she had been fighting defensively, unwilling to seriously hurt the other wolf. Honey tore off a second leg. When it broke off with a sharp point, instead of using it as a club, she used it as a modified lance.
Good, Adam said quietly. She'd hear him. That's it.
She lost the table leg eventually. She brought it up as a shield when Lenka struck with her knife, taking advantage of an opening Honey had lured her into. The knife sank deeply into the wood. Honey twisted, and Lenka couldn't keep her grip on the weapon. Honey threw the table leg, knife and all, through one of the plate glass windows, shattering the glass and leaving the knife out of play unless and until someone decided to go through a window after it.
She is beautiful, Buonarroti said,
mesmerized, his desire scenting the room.
Like a tigress, all muscle and speed.
Lust had changed his eyes, and not even the most mundane human would have looked into that feral face and thought anything but vampire. Even though vampires didn't need to breathe, he was sucking in great gulps of air, air now scented with blood and sweat and need. His need. Across the room, Marsilia was watching Buonarroti with sad eyes. Not hurt or broken-hearted or anything like that. Just sad. The way someone would look at a fallen Ajax or Hercules. She was wrong. Buonarroti wasn't even down yet, let alone out. But there was no question that his hunger for honey, for any female werewolf's blood, was driving him now. He wouldn't like having Adam and his people see him like this. He'd remember it later. But so would Adam. It took her a while because Lenka was a hell of a fighter, but Honey pinned the other wolf to the floor in a wrestler's hold, panting, blood dripping from her mouth and her nose. Honey looked not at Adam, but at Elizaveta.
Can this be fixed? I smell witchcraft on this band around her neck, Honey said.
Adam was starting to think that he should find out more about Bonorata's witches. According to Buonarroti, he had a healer who had mended Mercy's near-fatal wound. Healing was not something black witches are supposed to be good at, and no white witch would have that kind of power. He'd had someone who'd made a gri-gri that had impressed Elizaveta. Adam knew how to read that old witch. Elizaveta walked to where the werewolf was pinned to the floor. She sank to her heels and examined the metal band around the werewolf's neck. Lenka bucked and struggled, but Honey held her fast. Elizaveta didn't seem worried. After a moment, she stood up.
No, she said sadly. The band keeps her under control, but it is a simple thing if powerful. It makes certain that she follows the orders she's given.
Honey looked at Adam then.
He said, It is a kindness.
She nodded. She had to let up just for a second to get the knife she kept strapped to the inside of her thigh. The one that she hadn't drawn during the fight because she needed to be sure that killing was the right thing to do. Lenka almost broke free, but she wasn't quick enough. She was malnourished, and that had hurt her fighting abilities. She was neither as strong nor as fast as she could have been. Now she was tired, too, and her speed was half what it had been in the beginning, though the fight had been relatively short. She couldn't avoid the small blade that slid into the joint between her spine and her head. She died when the blade slipped in, but it took a moment for the air to leave her lungs and her body to quit moving. Honey's blade wasn't silver, but it was deadly enough. Honey pulled the blade out when Lenka was dead. He couldn't always tell with vampires, but werewolves were easy. Their smell changed. She wiped the blade clean on her pant leg. It wasn't prudent in a place filled with vampires, but he thought she was not in the mood for prudence. She sheathed the blade and accepted Adam's hand up. She didn't need his help rising, but he knew the touch of pack would center her. She stood, letting him hold her for half a breath before she slipped away. As soon as she was standing, Adam turned his attention to Bonaranta. Adam knew he'd been taking a chance by turning his back on the vampire, but Honey came first. And he had people in the room who would watch the vampire for him. As it turned out, Bonaranta had had other things to occupy himself with. The Lord of Night was staring at Lenka's body with an expression Adam had seen on junkies looking at a dime bag. A deep need that overwhelmed any other thought or emotion. But the expression faded as Lenka's blood died with her, leaving Bonaranta with an expression that looked very much like regret and relief on his face.
Adam, said Stefan urgently.
Beside you, said Smith at nearly the same moment. Adam reached out and wrapped a hand around Honey's biceps and blocked her with his body as she launched herself at Bonaranta.
Stand down, he told her, pulling her close to his body so she could smell Pack and Alpha.
So she could feel his command sink in to her bones. He felt her resistance, though she never pushed against him. She just leaned her forehead to his shoulder and said,
Lenka was a wolf I'd have hunted the moon with. Not a friend, but she was smart and tough. Peter had stories.
Her voice trailed off. Adam didn't take his eyes off Bonaranta, who was beginning to look at Honey the way he'd looked at Lenka. He didn't want to share intimate things in front of the vampire, but for Honey, he'd do what he could. He put a smile in his voice. Peter had a thing for powerful women. She laughed wetly against him.
I guess he did. I miss him.
He kissed the top of her head. We all do. You should go change your clothes and clean up. He looked around for someone to send with her. Stefan said, I'll go up with her. He was watching Bonaranta's face, too. Dressing Honey to seduce had, in retrospect, been a stupid thing to do. Adam glanced at the body on the floor. A stupid thing, but he couldn't regret it. This poor creature was free now. Keeping his body between Bonaranta and Honey, Adam turned her over to Stefan. They walked slowly, but no one in the room spoke or moved until after they were gone. When the door shut behind them, Bonaranta blinked and came back to himself, ignoring the body as though Lenka had not been his... sheep was the wrong word, and Adam couldn't find a right one. Victim, maybe. As though Lenka hadn't been his victim for centuries, Bonaranta said in a light, casual voice,
I have asked you to meet with me here to tell you that I have disturbing news.
Standing close behind Adam, Smith inhaled and made a sound. And Adam wondered if he was going to have to send Smith out, too. It was probably a good thing that they weren't pack. The two of them weren't connected at all, really. Rage was one of those emotions that tended to snowball between pack members.
What news? Asked Marsilia.
Adam thought that she had decided to play mediator, then remembered that he'd asked her to do just that. To get them out of there in as short a time as possible so he could go find Mercy. He reached out to Mercy and found her. Just knowing that she was still okay was enough to settle his wolf a bit. But like Bonaranta, Adam made an effort not to look at the dead wolf on the floor. Impossible not to smell her, though. A chime sounded, a slightly different chime than the one that had announced last meal.
Ah, Bonaranta said. First meal. Why don't we discuss matters over food?
Agreed, said Adam. We have news for you as well.
Bonaranta led the way into the dining room. Marsilia and Elisaveta followed him. The two goblins, Harris slightly to the back of Larry, like a guard, fell in behind the women. Smith, taking up the tail end of the line, stopped by the dead werewolf. He went down on one knee beside her and touched her forehead. He bowed his head and said very softly, "What are you going to do with the body?" Bonarata came to a halt and turned back. Adam would swear the sadness on his face was genuine.
"She served me well for a long time. We will bury her in the garden where she liked to rest in the sun when she could. I think she would have liked that, don't you?"
Smith vibrated, his hand still on the dead wolf's forehead. Adam waited. Finally, the wolf said, "It sounds peaceful, I think. Thank you."
"Did you know her, too?"
Harris asked. Smith got up, sighed, and walked to the others. "Everyone knew about Lenka," he said.
"And someone should have done something sooner," muttered Larry. "Lots of someones tried," said Bonarata. "We did not bury them in the garden."
His voice sounded amused. His public mask was back on and firmly in place. Adam didn't think that Bonarata would have been so sanguine if he'd been looking at Smith at that moment. But maybe he was wrong. People discount submissive wolves. Adam had hoped to be gone before the first meal, but that wasn't going to happen now. Mercy was still on the other end of their bond, so he could manage another hour of negotiations, as long as he wasn't the one doing the negotiating. Now that they were being honest in their dealings with Bonarata, he trusted Marsilia to reclaim her role as diplomat. And there was still Guccio, who had marked Adam as his food. To get to Mercy an hour sooner, Adam would have forgone the pleasure of teaching Guccio why vampires didn't go about thinking of alpha werewolves as prey. So he wasn't altogether disappointed with the delay. They crossed into the dining room, and Bonarata stopped to speak softly to one of his vampires, who then walked quickly off without appearing to rush.
"Your witch wasn't careful," said Elisaveta, as they started forward again. "That collar would not have..."
She paused.
"I think it was already no longer keeping her obedient."
Behind them, Smith growled again. It was a quiet thing, so maybe the vampire and witch didn't hear it.
Bonarata nodded. "It was becoming a concern," he said. "But I have not had a witch capable of that kind of work since before the Second World War."
He smiled at Elisaveta.
"Would you be interested in a job?"
When she didn't immediately respond, Adam looked at her thoughtfully.
"No," she said at last. "Though if you let us leave with honey, I'll let you pay me to remove that unfortunate addiction you have."
She pursed her lips.
"It won't be cheap, I warn you."
"He could not keep honey," Adam said coolly, because it had been obvious from Bonarata's expression at Elisaveta's reply that the vampire had been considering how he might do that very thing.
"No?" asked Bonarata silkily.
"No," said Marsilia. He turned on his heel so that he faced Marsilia. Her shoulders were back, her weight was balanced over the balls of her feet. She was ready for a fight. Bonarata's mask held for a heartbeat, then it was gone. Adam realized that they had done what they set out to do, upset the master vampire in the middle of his own game. The bonhomie of their first meeting was no longer a solid disguise behind which Bonarata could run the show. Adam could see the monster quite clearly, and as Bonarata looked at Marsilia, Adam could see the man, too. A man with a million regrets that mostly surrounded the woman who defied him. Ironically, now that Adam knew where Mercy was and he just had to shake himself free of Bonarata, Adam would have been happier with a genial host. They could have taken care of business in a cool and logical fashion, and Adam would be on his way by now. Instead, Adam could feel his wolf's satisfaction as it settled itself for the brutal fight the beast foresaw. Something would happen. The energy of the room had tipped into potential violence. Because if Bonarata said the condescending pablum Adam could see his mouth forming, Marsilia was going to hit him. No matter how happy that would make his wolf, it would be faster to go if a fight didn't break out. So Adam broke up the moment between Marsilia and Bonarata by saying, If you don't have a witch of my Elizaveta's power at your call, how did you heal Mercy from her near-fatal wounds? His intention was to turn the vampire's ire from Marsilia to himself, and to force Bonorata to backtrack. Because logically, either Bonorata had lied about what he'd done for Mercy, and Adam knew those wounds had been bad, he'd felt her pain and seen the blood, or just now Bonorata had lied about not having a witch. Bonorata dragged his eyes from Marsilia, and the look he gave Adam was almost grateful. It was a guy thing. He, too, knew whatever he had been about to say to Marsilia wouldn't have been useful. It had just been beyond his power to not say it. Adam was happy to help.
"We didn't have a witch mend your wife," Bonorata said. "A healer did it. Come and meet her."
"Healer?" Bonorata didn't wait for questions. He looked around the dining room and led them to a back table with a soft-looking vampire male who was playing games designed to encourage the girl sitting next to him to eat. Adam recognized those games because he'd played them more than a time or two when Jesse was a toddler. This girl was a lot older than a toddler. She was dark-haired and blue-eyed and oddly unfinished. A mundane human would look at her and think Down syndrome or something of the sort. Adam observed her, and his nose told him that she was fey and human. She looked like she was 14 or 15, but having fey blood, she could have been 400 or 500 years old and looked no different. She was too thin, and there were circles under her eyes. But when she looked up and saw Bonorata, her face lit up. She left her place and trotted, there was no other word that fit the high-stepping shuffle, around the table and made happy noises as she raised her arms. Bonorata laughed, a big, booming laugh that suited him oddly well, and was nothing any vampire had any business having, and wrapped his arms around her. He swung her around twice and set her down gently on the floor. He stopped her too loud babbling that didn't, to Adam's ears, appear to actually be words. She quieted and looked up at the vampire with the eagerness of a corgi awaiting orders.
"Stacia," Bonorata said. "Stacia, these are my friends, Marsilia, Elizaveta, Adam, Larry, Austin, Matt. People, this is my friend, Stacia."
She gave each of them a cheerful wave until she got to Adam. She squinted, stuck out her tongue in thought, then clapped her hands suddenly and her mouth rounded in surprise. She looked at Bonorata and wiggled her fingers with such abandon it took Adam a moment to realize she was using a form of sign language. She turned back to Adam and gave him a huge smile. She patted his arm, sending a zing of power all the way from the skin where she touched up to his nose. He didn't flinch. He took her hand in his and kissed it. He knew what he was looking at. This child was the single reason Bonorata's machinations hadn't killed Mercy. She blushed and clasped her hands together, pressed close to her stomach. But the smile she gave Adam was pure delight.
"She says that you belong to the pretty lady she healed," Bonorata said. "She thinks that you should go find her and give her a hug."
The girl patted Bonorata. He laughed.
"Okay, a very big hug."
She nodded firmly, apparently having no trouble understanding English, even though she apparently didn't speak it, and maybe no other language except her own.
"And you need to go eat, young lady. You are too thin."
She gave him a sweet smile and took the hand of the vampire, who was evidently her caretaker, and let him lead her back to her food. On the way through the dining hall, Bonorata said,
"We found her in a ghetto in some little town in the middle of the Great War."
World War I, Adam thought, a century ago.
"She is fey," said Larry.
"Partly," Bonorata said. "Or so we think."
"More than half," Larry told him seriously.
"Don't let the fey know you have her here. She'd be useful to them, and I don't think they'd treat her as well as you do. They've little patience with creatures who are not perfect."
He spoke, as he often did, as though he did not consider himself to be one of the fey.
"So I have always thought," agreed Bonorata as he turned, presumably to take them to where they would be eating this evening.
He paused, looked sharply at Adam and took a step closer, and inhaled. The vampire who'd brought drinks to their room earlier approached before Bonarata could comment on the scent he'd finally noticed.
"Your pardon," she told them. "Our seating arrangements had to be rapidly rearranged. Miss Arkadyevna, Mr. Harris, Mr. Setaway, Mr. Smith. I have you seated over there at the little table with the peach rose flower arrangement. There was not time to find a cordial dining companion, so I thought it was best to seat you among yourselves."
Bonarata held up a hand.
"One moment, Annabelle. Could you find Guccio, please, and bring him here?"
"Adam met Guccio wandering the hall with a witched bag that allowed him to walk in the day,"
Marsilia told Bonarata in a low voice, because people were starting to look at them.
"Ah," murmured Bonarata. "I'd been told that piece of witchcraft was no more."
They all watched as Annabella walked quickly through the room and found Guccio talking to a small group of vampires near the table where they'd eaten before. Guccio looked over at Bonarata, then said something to Annabella and patted her shoulder before breaking off from the others and weaving his way to Bonarata's side.
"Why is it that Adam carries your mark?"
Bonarata's voice was almost cheerful. And now the whole room fell silent. No one looked at Bonarata, but they were listening as hard as they could. Guccio blushed and swore. Then he said contritely,
"I am sorry, Master. I had hoped to have a word before this meal, but I was distracted with some confusion about a delivery of... I suppose that part doesn't matter. It was a stupid thing. I was going through an old trunk last night and happened upon this."
He pulled the gris out of his shirt.
"I didn't even know if it worked or not anymore. Mary made it for me a long time ago. I thought I'd try it."
He took a deep breath, then said in a voice that was raw,
"I miss the sun."
There was a sympathetic echo that had no sound, but it swept through the room just the same. Those words found a home with every vampire here. A human might not have noticed it, but Adam's wolf was on high alert, and that left Adam taking note of everything.
"It still worked, but Mary's spell has always brought out the wild in me," Guccio continued.
A second, lesser reaction in the hall. There were a number of people, Adam judged, who knew what Guccio was saying and agreed with it. He thought about Elisabetta's words, how such objects should be used with caution because the evil could bleed through.
"I was just walking,"
Guccio said, his eyes half closed as though he was reliving that moment in his dreams.
"I could feel the sun above me, reaching through the walls of the house, and suddenly there he was. I touched him before I thought."
He gave Adam an apologetic smile.
"I am sorry. It will fade in a day or two, as long as I don't touch you again."
"It is of no matter," said Adam.
Matt Smith's suspicion turned into a certainty. He'd been concerned since this morning when Adam had come in to tell them that he'd had a run-in with Guccio. It was not like an alpha to allow another person to trespass, to mark him as if he were prey, then dismiss it as nothing. Matt stepped forward and touched Adam on the shoulder. When the other werewolf looked at him, Matt dropped his gaze.
"I need to have a word, sir," he said. "It's important."
Bonarata frowned at him and said,
"It will wait until after breakfast, I trust."
"I would not have my cook offended for a light matter."
Matt could have heaved a sigh of relief, but he didn't. If there were words better guaranteed to get him his 5 minutes alone, he wasn't sure what they were.
"Of course not," said Adam.
"We wouldn't dream of offending your cook. You will start without us. I'll be back shortly."
"Adam,"
said Marsilia. Adam glanced at Matt, who shook his head. This was a matter for wolves. "Start without me," he told Marsilia, and he headed for the nearest door, which happened to be the one that led back into Bonarata's art gallery. Matt trailed after him, doing his best to look apologetic. He knew people well enough to understand that no one who wasn't seated at the table with the little healer half-blood would get to eat until he and Adam got back. Adam shut the door behind him. "There are cameras in this room," he said, "and this model includes a mic, so don't say or do anything that you don't want Bonarata to know about." and Adam would know, wouldn't he? Security was what the Columbia Basin Alpha did for his other job. Matt said boldly,
"You've been kissed by a vampire, Adam."
Adam stared at him. "No," he said without conviction. "I looked." His breathing grew rapid, and so did the pulse in his neck. There were no bite marks. He pulled up his sleeve, and there were two rough puncture marks on the inside of his arm.
"See?" he said. "Vampire bites heal as slowly on a werewolf as any wound on a mortal. If I had been bitten, there would be marks."
His voice was slowing, slurring, as something inside, probably his wolf, fought to uncover the lies he'd been fed. Lies that blinded him to the red marks on his skin. Matt wished there were pack bonds between them. Pack bonds always made it easier to get an alpha to listen to him. He raised his eyes and met Adam's.
"You were bitten," he said.
"Without the pack here to anchor you, a powerful enough vampire can make you remember whatever he wants you to remember. You have to fight it, Adam. Listen to your wolf and fight it." Adam held his gaze and broke out in a sweat as the brown lightened to gold. The wolf inside Adam, in another place and time, might have objected to another wolf holding his eyes, but this was not a dominance fight. Matt's status, instead of making this a fight, made it an offer of help, acceptable to Adam's wolf. Matt had hoped it would work, but dominant wolves were unpredictable. This could have ended in bloodshed.
"Shit," said Adam,
the words dragging out of him like pulling a body out of quicksand.
"Shit. Damn it to hell, I have been bitten by a fucking vampire."
"Change," Matt suggested.
"That will help."
Adam shook his head and gritted his teeth.
"Can't," Adam said. "Can't lose face with Bonarata. I have to stay human. I have to get out of here tonight to get mercy. And before I do, I need to figure out why the hell Bonarata stole her in the first place. Stupid fucking vampires."
"Agreed," said Matt, though pretty undiplomatic if we are being recorded. "Is there anything I can do to help?"
"Not now," Adam said. "I'll fight this out myself. Now that I know what's going on, I think I've got this."
He took a deep, ragged breath.
"This will teach me not to listen to my wolf. It's been telling me there is something wrong since..."
Adam looked at Matt and flashed him a surprisingly sweet smile, given the sweat trickling down his forehead.
"Since Mercy disappeared, I guess. And that was the problem. Too hard to tell one hissy fit from another."
He fell silent. Matt put a hand tentatively on the other wolf's shoulder, and when Adam didn't shrug him off, he left it there. They didn't share a bond, but Matt was older than he looked, and there were ways to feed power through touch. Adam lifted his head and opened blind eyes when he felt the initial rush. He sucked in two gulps of air, then said in a hoarse voice,
"You'll have to teach me how to do that when this is all over. I can think of all sorts of times that would come in handy."
Matt smiled, though the other wolf couldn't see him.
"Will do."
And then he fed him more power. It wasn't as much help as Adam's pack would have been. With a pack, Guccio would never have been able to get such a hold on an alpha's mind. It said something about Guccio's ranking among the vampires that he could do it at all. He caught a whiff of honey and knew that Adam was pulling on that bond, too. He could tell when Adam freed himself because the alpha wolf's body relaxed and his breathing eased. When Adam opened his eyes, they were dark brown once more.
"I've left the tie in place," he told Matt. "I don't want to give Guccio warning. Let's see what he does with it."
Matt's eyebrows rose.
"Is that wise?"
"Probably not," Adam said with a toothy smile. "But I've got it. Do me a favor, though."
"Anything," Matt said. "If I start doing what Guccio says, take that gun in your ankle holster and shoot me with it, would you?"
Matt grinned.
"Sure thing."
Adam took the lead back to the dining hall. The filthy tie that Guccio had imposed upon him made him feel like Little Miss Muffet on her tuffet, but he couldn't afford to react to the great spider. He tried to look as if all that he'd been discussing with Smith had been the latest episode of Doctor Who, though he couldn't do anything about the sweat.